What does it take to rise from a Bronx housing project to the Supreme Court? The answer isn't what you'd expect. It's not just grit or brilliance, though both matter. It's something more intimate. A grandmother's weekly envelope containing a crisp dollar bill wrapped in a paper napkin. It's the moment an 8-year-old girl, exhausted by her parents' screaming, drags a chair to the stove to sterilize her own insulin needle. Sonia Sotomayor's journey to becoming the first Latina Supreme Court justice isn't a fairy tale of triumph over adversity. It's something richer and more complex. It's a story about how we're shaped by the people who believe in us, the crises that force us to grow up too fast, and the quiet moments when we decide who we're going to become. At 8 years old, Sonia stood on a chair watching a needle boil on the stove. Her parents were fighting about who would give her the insulin shot. Neither could handle it without panic. So she decided, if they couldn't do it, she would. Juvenile diabetes in the 1960s meant no glucose meters, no continuous monitoring, just urine strips showing hours-old blood sugar levels. Sonia developed an almost supernatural awareness of her body's signals, learning to read subtle shifts that meant danger. This forced mindfulness sharpened her ability to recall emotional memories and sense what others were feeling, skills that would later make her exceptional in courtrooms. But diabetes brought something darker, the shadow of early death. Rather than crushing her spirit, this knowledge created fierce urgency. If time was limited, she couldn't waste a moment. For years, she carried syringes discreetly, hiding her condition. Only at 30 did she discover how much treatment had improved and learn that secrecy served no one. Eventually, she became proud to offer living proof that diabetics can achieve extraordinary dreams. Every child needs at least one adult who offers unconditional love. For Sonia, that person was Abuelita Mercedes, whose tiny apartment became a sanctuary from the chaos at home. People called Sonia Mercedita, Little Mercedes, because they shared something deeper than genetics, a twin spirit that sometimes felt telepathic. Saturday gatherings transformed Abuelita's small space into a vibrant center of Puerto Rican culture. Dominoes clattered, music filled the air, and aromas of her cooking made everyone's mouth water. Then someone would lift the needle off the record. Time for poetry. These rituals provided the stability and joy that Sonia's immediate family couldn't offer. Shopping trips to the Vivero became treasured adventures. While her cousin Nelson refused these expeditions, Sonia embraced them, learning to choose the feistiest birds and haggle for the best sofrito ingredients. These weren't just errands, they were lessons in discernment and negotiation. When Abuelita's weekly envelope stopped arriving during Sonia's college years, Sonia learned her grandmother was dying of ovarian cancer. On Christmas Eve, she stayed at her bedside while others left. Delirious, Abuelita recognized Sonia briefly and demanded a cigarette. Sonia gave it to her despite hospital rules. After one puff, the life left her face. Years later, reflecting on why she thrived while Nelson succumbed to addiction, Sonia understood. Abuelita's protection had given her the will to manage her illness and imagine improbable possibilities.
Dios se lo llevó. God took him. At 9, Sonia understood immediately. Her father had died. At the funeral home, when her aunt insisted she kiss him goodbye, the powdery white face resembled him, but wasn't him. Something inside her loosened. Perhaps life would be easier without the fighting. That summer, reading became her solace. The Parkchester Library became her haven, especially a burgundy leather-bound volume of Greek mythology Dr. Fisher had lent her. Gods who interfered in human affairs, like Abuelita's familiar spirits. But her mother's grief baffled her. Their relationship had seemed nothing but fighting. One day, Sonia pounded on her mother's bedroom door. "Enough! You've got to stop this! Poppy died! Are you going to die too? Then what happens to me and Junior?" The next morning, everything changed. Window shades were up, the radio played, and her mother appeared in a black dress with white polka dots, wearing makeup. With mourning over, the bitter conflict disappeared. Her mother worked early shifts, maintained an immaculate apartment, and served as an unofficial visiting nurse throughout their housing project. Nearly 50 years later, writing her memoir, Sonia finally understood her mother's grief. Her childhood perspective had been frozen in time, silenced by shame surrounding her father's alcoholism.
You've got to get your education. It's the only way to get ahead in the world. After her father's death, her mother's refrain became Sonia's driving force. In fifth grade, Mrs. Riley's Gold Star system ignited her competitive spirit. After earning her first A's, Sonia vowed each report card would have at least one more A than the last. But wanting A's and getting them were different things. Sonia did something that would become a lifelong pattern. She asked Donna Ranella, one of the smartest girls, how to study. Donna taught her to underline key facts, condense notes, and review before tests. The deeper lesson, don't be shy about making a teacher of anyone who knows what they're doing. At Princeton, her first history paper earned a C. Professor Nancy Weiss explained she needed argumentative structure, not regurgitated facts. Sonia realized she could apply her debate skills to writing, but her English was riddled with Spanish constructions. She bought grammar handbooks and vocabulary booklets, devoting lunch hours to exercises. Princeton taught her she'd need to remain a student for life. Her knowledge gaps stemmed from class and cultural background, not lack of aptitude, a distinction that freed her to learn without shame.
Sonia discovered her calling at Yale Law School when Robert Morgenthau described how his assistant DAs tried cases within their first year. As a rookie prosecutor during a crime wave, she thrived on trial work's verbal sparring and improvised strategy. Her friend Don, a defense attorney, reminded her of the human costs behind convictions, tempering her competitive drive with compassion. After 5 years, she joined Pavia and Harcourt, where David Botwinick became her ethical mentor. She learned intellectual property law working luxury goods cases, tracking counterfeit supply chains with private investigators. She loved the investigative puzzle solving, though raids sometimes required marshals to escort her after gang threats. When offered partnership, Pavia and Botwinick added a prophecy. You won't stay in private practice forever. You're destined for the bench, maybe even the Supreme Court. Their words exposed her secret ambition. On August 12, 1992, after 18 months, the Senate confirmed her district court nomination. Her first month as a judge terrified her. When a Hells Angels case forced her onto the bench, her knees knocked audibly. But once engaged, anxiety vanished. She told her assistant, "I think this fish has found her pond." As Sonia placed her hand on the Bible in Chief Justice Marshall's chair, an electric current coursed through her. The moment belonged to her tearful mother, beaming brother, and many friends, and to those recently passed, her friend Elaine and Dave Botwinick, who had set this dream in motion. She recalled a high school accusation. "Everything depends on context with you. People like you have no principles." While values like integrity and fairness brook no compromise, she never accepted that judging each situation on its merits compromises principle. Treating individuals with dignity regardless of one's own views is itself an inviolable principle. She remembered running as a child in Mayagüez with a melting pirawaga, feeling overwhelming joy from simple gratitude for being alive. The words came to her then as now, "I am blessed. In this life, I am truly blessed." Her story reminds us that success doesn't require abandoning our origins, but integrating them into who we become. Through diabetes, family loss, and professional setbacks, she developed resilience without hardening her heart, demonstrating that determination, combined with the courage to seek help, can overcome seemingly insurmountable obstacles.